Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Tearsheet Podcast, where we explore financial services together with an eye on technology, innovation, emerging models, and changing expectations. I'm Tearsheet Editor-in-Chief, Zach Miller. As we continue to explore how financial services is attempting to cater to younger customers, it's clear some neobanks and fintechs resonate with Gen Z much more than traditional FIs, and that may be because they've identified niche customer groups and are thinking out of the box when it comes to designing products for them. That's according to Josh Stevens, SVP of Product at Current, and Tony Tran, SEO and co-founder of Lumanu. Both of these professionals and the companies they've helped build stand out among just a handful of financial services firms building their products and their services, designing their infrastructure, and establishing the channels to foster relationships with their clients today and into the future. Stevens and Tran joined me on stage for a fireside chat in March at MasterCard's Tech Hub in New York City at our Gen Z symposium to talk about how their companies are catering to Gen Z. Our conversation explores the evolving standards banks have to meet when serving younger customers. We spend a good deal of time exploring the importance and design of good UX for today's customers as well, and we end with a discussion about how communities may be the way forward to educate and engage Gen Z. Here's my conversation with Josh Stevens and Tony Tran.
For our panel, I want to invite up Josh Stevens and Tony Tran, both two of the best companies and product people that I have met along the way. We're going to have a conversation about getting Gen Z started, the challenges and opportunities to build financial products Gen Z loves. Tony is CEO and co-founder of Lumanu, a fintech platform that redefines how companies connect and transact with contractors from influencers to consultants. And prior to Lumanu, Tony was a consultant at McKinsey in the technology media sector. And Josh Stevens is SVP of product at Current, a premier US fintech platform dedicated to empowering Americans in their pursuit of a brighter financial future. He joined Current in 2016, you were early, as part of the founding team to lead product after serving in product management roles at various companies, including Zynga. As head of product at Current, he has helped the platform scale to millions of members through offering innovative products that meet the diverse financial needs to Americans. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank
you. Is okay?
Yeah.
Do you mind if I sit on the edge there? I sit in the middle. Is that okay? You guys can decide. Musical chairs. So let's jump right in and talk about who your target users are. Can you guys personify them, articulate who your end user is and her traits, desires, wants, and needs? Josh, I guess you're on the end. We could start with you.
Sure. So Current, as kind of was just introduced, is a mobile banking platform. We're focused on providing financial services for what we call overlooked Americans. And maybe I'll start there when we think about who our demographics are. We've always been traditionally younger, but we've also been folks who traditionally make less money or come from lower income backgrounds. We are age-wise, we are roughly, 16 to 40. We do have a kind of teen-specific product, but bulk of our customers sit within the 18 to 40 range. These are people who tend to be lower income. We're talking sub 75K HHI. We're talking sub 600 FICO scores. These are people who traditionally fall outside of, let's call it the credit card sphere of American spending. And so many of these folks get left behind by traditional institutions, and that's created a real opportunity for us to provide services that help catch them up.
Before we move on to Tony, I'm curious, you mentioned, Josh, when you started that there's almost like an ethos in the company. Is that accurate, that given the background of how some of the people grew up, how does that infuse, your target audience?
We think a lot. You have to get out of the sort of skin, I think, of what a lot of what we see around us. The US is a credit obsessed culture, obsessed, right? We look around and no knocks on people in this room and certainly this building, but the reality is that we're very unique, unlike other places in the world, where we are trying to always spend on credit and we're incentivized to spend on credit. But that incentivization can be dangerous for a lot of folks. And I think as certainly part of our very initial sort of conceptualization about what we wanted to do, and certainly when we started thinking what were these actual, like even in 2017, 2016, we're thinking a lot of like, what are real financial problems people struggle with? The more you dig into that, the more you realize that finances are a deep, deep source of stress. They're a deep source of sort of emotional challenges. And that's something, when you peel that back, you start realizing there's a lot of opportunity in there to provide better opportunities.
Great, thank you. How about you, Tony? You address a different person, right?
Yeah, so our business is a little bit of a interesting hodgepodge. We're a B2B2C. So our end users, the best way to think about it is, you know, for the most of the folks in this room, your first job is probably a W-2 job. You know, you show up, you submit an I-9, you have HR briefing you. So our users are folks that are not W-2. You know, they tend to make their earnings working on one-off projects, whether you're an influencer, photographer, consultant, solopreneur, small business owner. And what we found is it's an incredibly almost traumatic experience when you get a client that wants to work with you. And now it's you versus the finance team at Walmart or Airbnb. You know, you're submitting W-9s, they're telling you you're doing things wrong, you get to jump to SAP and all these other things. So our goal is, we want to make the getting paid experience for that generation of solopreneurs and small business owners as easy as it is for us to get a paycheck, you know, when we are W-2 employees. And then the other part of our user spectrum is the people at these companies that actually work with these folks, whether it's finance, marketing, productions. Because what we see is, you know, it's a very collaborative economy. You can't treat people like an expense item or a budget item or a tax identification number. They're real people. And you have to make sure that they get paid, not net 90, but when their work is done. So that's our end users, are the independent workers.
I appreciate that. We'll stick with you, Tony. So how to go from 0 to 1? How do you get Gen Z started in your respective domain?
So for us, a lot of Gen Zs get invited to our platform whenever they land any type of engagement or gig. And I think, you know, in today's economy, when you're a brand trying to talk to Gen Z, the best way is to co-build and work with other Gen Zs. So one thing we learned is, you know, they get invited and the first experience is, hey, you know, now sign up and this is what you got to do to get paid. It's a little bit tricky because we have to explain to them things like your SSN, your EIN, or your sole prop and all these things. But that's basically the 0 to 1 part of our product, is getting them right at the moment where they just sign a contract, they're about to get work, and now they have to jump to all these other hoops to get paid.
How do you reach them at that point? Is it through the employer, through their contractor?
It is. So it's twofold. They get invited by our clients, which are these brands and these agencies. But we also have sort of a side panel where we do a lot of partnership and sort of community education. We just found that sometimes it's helpful to prime the engine. So teaching them things. And one thing I learned is you can't dumb down the language. I think, Taylor, we were talking earlier about not changing the UX. Like, we don't make up different terms. We use language like, you know, EIN, TIN, and really use that opportunity to educate them through the community as well as the product.
How about you, Josh? How do you get people started?
I was just thinking about the terminology, right? And in consumer finance, terminology is like rocket science, you know what I mean? And so we actually take a different approach on that. But just to answer the question more directly, you know, Current started with Gen Z, right? Our first product was a team banking product. I think the insight at the time was very basic. You know, people wanted to spend. Parents were sitting with cash. They didn't know how to solve it. You know, you provide a debit card, that's a little more straightforward. We weren't the only ones, obviously, in that space to get going. But I think as we've grown with a lot of our customers, I think the needs have changed and the market has changed. And so what we realized was this idea of going and opening your first bank account was not intuitive, right? It's almost a cliche to say you have like a digital first generation, but it's obvious to any of us, I think, that if you want to get something new, you should have some sort of mobile first way to do that. And I think particularly for our customer base, first job, what do you do with that paycheck? And, you know, to your point, like, there are a lot of technical terms that come with this idea of how do you receive it? So we spend a lot of time thinking through, how do you make that really simple? You know, what do you do to put that in a language people understand? How do you take out a lot of the friction of that experience of depositing something and then make the overall kind of holistic experience of spending your money, saving your money, getting faster access to your money as easy as possible?
I just want to double click on that. It's a side point, but is the goal at Current then to grow alongside some of your earlier users? Like, how does that impact like product design and your thinking about that as they get older and more experienced?
Yeah, I mean, we've started with younger folks and we've grown with those folks and we've continued to expand our offerings to a wider set of people. But I think a lot of the let's call it the learnings that you get from younger folks apply to other people as well. And I think you see this way beyond financial products. So for example, much of the social media people end up consuming starts at a place where it's often younger people using it first. And the way I often think about this too is that if I am utilizing a certain type of product that operates in a certain way, there's no reason why my bank shouldn't be the same way. That's my expectation. That's the bar. You need to meet that bar. And so we try to bring a lot of that same type of ethos to the way we design and the way we think through who our target customer is and what they expect.
Got it. And I know in our coverage on Tearsheet of the space, a lot of attention, at least that we're bringing, and maybe it's early in terms of as the industry focuses on better attracting and servicing this demographic, we talk a lot about UX and some of the expectations there. We'll start with you, Josh. Can you share any insights into the design principles or strategies that have proven successful for your products and services?
Yeah, for sure. I'll start with one, and I think it's sort of obvious. It's, you know, we try to make complex things simple. And it's obvious because that should be the case for everything anyone is doing ever. But I think when it comes to financial products, as I was mentioning, they tend to be very complex. So asking someone, you know, how do you want to set up your direct deposit is not so simple. And it changes depending on who your employer is and what types of forms you're getting and, you know, how you're getting paid, all of this stuff. But we try to make that stuff really simple. And I think the way that nets out when you think of strategy or implementation, I mentioned a little bit before about how, you know, Americans are credit obsessed. And I think when you think of younger people and you think of lower income people, credit is a very challenging topic. People tend to have low credit scores. They tend to fall into debt cycles. They fall into those debt cycles because they want access to credit. They can't afford that credit. So they go for more expensive credit. And it's sort of a rough road from there. So we focused on creating a better credit building product. It's a credit building card that's integrated directly into our overall banking experience. And so unlike other offers out there whereby, you know, you need to get a specific credit building card when you sign up for credit for Current and start using it, you're just building credit, right? So again, simple, let's try to make it, take all the jargon out of it, allow them to, you know, live the way they're going to live and spend the way they want to spend, but reward them for it in a way that helps them out in terms of how they need to get ahead anyways.
Shameless plug. We actually just did a podcast on the launch of that card last Friday. So check it out on the Tearsheet website. Tony, how about you? How do you guys think about UX?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting problem for us. And I'll give one very specific example. We had a product feature called Instant Pay. And the idea is, you know, in a 1099 world, it's not like you get a paycheck every 2 weeks, you do your work. And some companies, you don't get paid for 60, 90, 120 days later. So we have a feature where once your work is approved by whoever your client is, you can get paid instantly. We played around with all these different types of UX constructs from, you know, this progressive disclosures, very lean, changing the language, mobile responsive. But what ended up working was actually just a text message. And one thing that we learned is in UX, it's not just what's in the product, it's the holistic experience your user has with everything else. We know that, especially with Gen Zs and younger millennials, they respond to text. They respond to very conversational DMs. We just tell them, hey, your work with Walmart is done. You're going to get paid in, you know, 60 days, or you want your money now, just respond yes. And that literally tripled our acceptance rate from like 20% to 60%. And, you know, that was way easier to build. It didn't really require any UX designs or Figma mocks. And that's just an example where you really have to think outside the box. You know, just fancy terms, conversational UX and things like that. But at the end of the day, just think about how you interact with a product. What is the job to be done? It's a common term in product, GTBD, you know, job to be done. And then what is the simplest way to get that job to be done? And that was an example where just, you know, taking inspiration from other things. Sometimes you don't need a nice pretty screen. You just need a text message.
Yeah, it's like the removal of UX in that sense.
Yeah, I love that. We talk about it sometimes as like perceived value and actualized value. You want to combine these to be as close to each other as they can. Yeah,
it does cost money though to send text. So you gotta do your unit economics to make sure it works.
Tony, just double clicking on that. Has that had broader ramifications in other products, or how has that deepened the way you think, or changed the way you think about product design?
Yes, and you know, I'm going to share some things that sound great now, but they were learned through so many painful mistakes and hours. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of times you don't learn until you try. One of the things that they used to teach you in school is, you know, you take your web experience, you try to have quote unquote feature parity when you go to mobile. And you spend a lot of time doing things like mobile native, mobile responsive. You spend so much time optimizing the mobile experience. You never actually ask the question, when a consumer is on their phone, what are they doing? Do they really need everything else that your desktop app has? And, you know, we launched a native mobile app that was glorious, that's very streamlined, and we just noticed people only use one part of it. And then, you know, in hindsight, what we end up doing now is we discontinued that mobile app, and we're going to relaunch it with really the entire experience centered around that one feature. Another company, by the way, that does this really well, if you guys are interested, it's this new browser company called Arc. Their mobile app is completely different. Jobs to be done, right? It's literally just a sidebar, bookmarks bar. But that's something that I think is also important. You think you just take a web top and change it to mobile, but really you got to rethink where the consumer is in the moment and build the product from the ground up from first principles that way.
I appreciate that. I think it was Mark Twain who said, I would have written you a shorter letter, but that would have taken too long. So it actually takes time to distill and energy and experimentation, as you're saying, to simplify. Our speakers, almost every single one today, spoke about inclusion and accessibility as important hallmarks of the Gen Z experience. How do you ensure that your offerings are inclusive and accessible to a diverse range of users, including those from underserved communities or with varying financial backgrounds? We'll start with you, Tony.
We've tried a few different things here. I think something was said earlier around community is really important. You know, I was a Vietnamese immigrant, grew up in South Carolina, didn't have a whole lot of people that looked like me in Greenville, South Carolina. But whenever someone who looked like me said something, I really listened. And one of the things we learned is, especially when it comes to scary topics like money or debt or banking, having a community of sort of, it's almost like diversity through homogenous groups. It's counterintuitive, but it works. You know, small communities where the people inside those communities have a lot of shared experiences, shared lived experiences, and can talk in the vernacular, the metaphors that really make sense, drive the points home. It's hard, you know, it's tempting to create a gigantic community that everyone's the same and you throw them all into one big Discord channel. But having those micro communities that add up to be a very diverse community, it's something that we've seen work. You know, we have female solo business owners. We have consultants who are in DEI that work with a very specific type of clients. And the groups could be 10, 20 people, could be a few hundred, but that's the best way that we found to really drive that diversity of users and education.
I appreciate that, Josh. And I know you alluded to this in your introduction, but how do you guys think about inclusion and accessibility?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of baked into the DNA of what we're doing. Again, I think it's when we think of our customers, we think of them as overlooked. And I think the main reason for that is just a lot of larger institutions don't have a business model that's set up to support folks who make less money. And so for us, we're constantly trying to better understand how, you know, people need to live and what kind of services they need to make that more positive for them. And, you know, I think something I often say is that, you know, the way you spend your money is the way you live your life. And if that's a very challenging thing to do on a day-to-day basis, then you are constantly living with more stress. And so for us, a lot of what we're trying to do is alleviate that stress, make it easier. And that can hopefully result in having a sort of larger now and a bigger future.
That's an answer I think that leads to this segue. Maybe we'll zoom out from your individual organizations and experiences, but start with you, Josh. Do you think this generation in particular is demanding a shift away from how FIs used to operate?
So maybe I'll answer this in two parts. I think the first is that I'm careful to ascribe, let's see, behavioral labels to the generation versus age and income. I graduated college in 2007, right? So 1 year before the 2008 financial crisis. And in my early career, people talked all the time about how millennials only used debit cards and didn't use credit because we were scarred by the 2008 financial crisis. And now I look around and everyone's using credit, right? Is that because of, you know, a generational shift, or is that because people started making more money or got better access to certain types of cards that happen to have better rewards on it? I think certainly when I look at younger folks now, and I look at Gen Z in particular, there is a demand for a different type of product. And that product, without a doubt, needs to be digital first. And you know, that product needs to speak to them, and that product needs to be easy to use, and it needs to understand you know, how they live their lives and what are the challenges they have. But I'm not necessarily sure that's not because the world changes and, you know, different generations move on. But I, without a doubt, think that people have to shift to adapt to that. I was chatting with this with a friend of mine, and it's, you know, you look at people who are in their 50s or 60s and they're still using mobile banking now. I think that is the norm, in part because that has how people are shifting. But I often think that is pushed by the habits of younger people.
And I think it does demand always a constant rethink of what types of services you're providing, because otherwise you get left behind. And for any, that's true for any industry, but I think that's particularly true for finance.
How about you, Tony?
I would echo. You know, I think the fundamental pillars of financial services, you know, you need to put money in a savings account. You need to have some way of growing returns, whether it's interest, CDs, stocks. You need to have some form of credit, you know, some level of debt, whether it's credit card, charge cards, even what we do, right, which is a variant of invoice factoring. All of those concepts have existed for a long time. And I think what is interesting about this next generation is not so much that they're this sort of homogenous generation, it's the form factor in which these fundamental financial products exist in. And sometimes less is more, you know. Do I really need a $10,000 business line of credit, or do I really just need some type of, you know, product that helps me with this one thing where I don't have cash on hand? And I think the trick is, how do you educate and break down these fundamental products into smaller things that can be digested and used in mobile and text and, you know, different form factors? But I don't think there's like a huge push towards, you know, fundamentally different, you know.
I think just to add on to that too, you know, we probably have to split out what is a macro factor and what is a generational instinct, right? So we're coming out of this extraordinary period of low interest rates that have impacted businesses in ways that I don't think everyone is fully aware of right now. And so the types of financial decisions you make when credit is very, very, very cheap might be very different than the types of decisions you make when that credit is all of a sudden prohibitively expensive. And I think that'll be true across the board. And I think you're going to see younger folks changing their habits to adjust to that, just like the rest of us.
I appreciate those answers. I'm getting to my last question. I think there'll be time for one or two questions from the crowd, if you guys are open to that. And I liked what you said, Josh, about saying you're careful not to ascribe like generalized principles to a diverse demographic. So I'm curious if either of you guys have any commonly held beliefs about Gen Z that you found not to be true from the perspective of your organization's interactions with them. Because I do see it in our reporting, and there's sometimes this bias, and it's easy to say Gen Z is like this. And I'm just curious when, you know, where the rubber hits the road, like, are you finding some of those things to be true?
I got one. So I have a couple of nieces and nephews who went through college during the pandemic, and I thought they were like the most antisocial people ever. Like, you know, they would never pick up the phone when I called them, like straight to voicemail, then text message. So I used to think all Gen Z were sort of just adverse towards live conversations. And maybe it's true. So, but in my experience with some of our users, the ability to have human to human contact, whether it's on a phone or in a, you know, in person, was something that was more than I thought would be. So I don't know if it's, you know, pandemic selection bias or what have you, but that was definitely something that was refreshing. And I definitely hop on my fair share of calls with Gen Z users, whether it's, you know, a solopreneur or a small business owner, small agency owner with like five people, talk to like a Gen Z lawyer who runs a small lawyer, you know, legal firm here. And it's just, I think that's one thing that's sometimes undervalued is that human to human phone, you know, taking off of text, off of DMs, off of emails.
Yeah, I think I'll just add that of our customers, we still see the same needs from Gen Z that we do from some of our older or even younger folks right now. We haven't seen a massive shift that's been, I guess, better explained by the demographic versus the need for better banking services. I do think that much of what I think the point that was made earlier on communities is dead on. And I think the way people discover products has changed a lot. And I think trust has changed a lot. But and that's frankly great for a company like Current. You know, I think it gives us a lot of opportunity to build a new type of brand with a new set of folks. But that doesn't mean that they're not using Chase and Bank of America. And, you know, there's still, when it comes to finances, people still have a certain set of like, this is something I know and feels trusted. And that set of trust is still something that I feels naturally human that you have to overcome when it comes to where you're putting your finances.
Appreciate that. I appreciate our conversation. Are there any questions you guys have? Anybody have follow-on question? I do have one more question because it would be Every conversation I have on the podcast now, everybody wants to speak about Gen AI. And it's like, you can't talk about financial services without, we were talking about it before. How do you guys think about that Gen AI and its application to your businesses? Are you experimenting with it? Are you thinking about it? Does it have any real life use cases right now?
I'll jump in there first. Yeah, there's sort of, I think anyone who's been watching the news a lot and pays attention to AI will recognize that there's a lot of talk and then there's some reality, right? And I think also if you've looked over the last 10 years, AI has been something that's been there and usable. So I think we split this out a little bit in terms of what we are surfacing to customers and then how we as a business potentially use AI. We're certainly using it a lot when it comes to better understanding of our customers, better modeling of our data. And we're looking at it a lot when it comes to applications with regard to things like insights. So I think most people here can imagine that even for themselves, like how do you have a better view on how you spend your money or what you should or should not be spending on, leveraging better modeling.
We still need better PFM tools. At the end of the day,
it's still the magic PFM still doesn't exist. So that there's huge opportunity there. And then I think the other area that I think, especially in consumer fintech, you're going to see more and more of is in the sort of customer support space and how do you continue to have a better experience. I think from anyone who's operated that side of the business, it's a very difficult one to get right. And there's a lot of opportunity to do that more effectively.
But you, Tony?
I would echo Josh a bit. I would say our AI usage between internal and external, the internal side, to put it bluntly, increases work-life balance. You know, everyone here knows the last 20% of whatever project or task takes forever, and just having AI really helps along with that. Whether it's
how much of your answers today was generated by AI?
The first 60%.
Yeah. First 60. That to wing the rest. So, you know, that's been really helpful. And it's funny, I'm actually, we're building something where we can toss the entire company's knowledge into it and be able to ask questions, right, at any time for new employees. Externally, there's a branch of Gen AI that's more around how it sort of acts on your behalf in devices you already own. So AI agents. And I think that actually has a lot of promise because one of the most common thing we hear from our users, I'm sure you hear it too, is there's just not enough hours in the day. I wish I could just duplicate myself. I do this once and then can something else just do it multiple times, but smart enough to sort of adjust it, right? And that's something that we've seen. You know, we help a lot of talent negotiate and figure out, you know, the nuances. And sometimes you just got to do the same thing multiple times, slightly differently. That's an area where AI agents can really help.
We're at the end of our talk. It's been great talking to you. I feel like we could talk another hour, but are there things that you guys haven't shared that you would like to share in the last minute or so? What you'd like people leaving with, parting gifts?
I guess I'll just add, you know, that if in consumer finance, we've been building for feels like forever now, you know, 7-8 years. And that has been a drop in the bucket in terms of how much more I think is possible. I think you're going to start seeing over the next year, the emergence of a lot of really, really interesting types of features that are helping people and continuously changing the perspectives of what is possible when it comes to consumer banking. And I think we're going to be at the real forefront of that. I'm excited to see it.
Great.
And I got one, just sort of a silver lining. I know everyone here has, you know, probably read the news about all the layoffs that's been going on. And I think one tiny little silver lining that we've seen is, you know, we've seen folks get laid off, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, from W-2 jobs, pick up relatively lucrative independent work. You know, it's not always the same pay for pay, but in terms of dollar per hour or excitement per dollar earned, I think it's relatively promising. And I predict that as AI gets better, as people really embrace freedom to work wherever, with whom they want, on projects they want, this idea of shifting from W-2s to, you know, solopreneurs, small business owners, 1099s is going to become more and more common. And things that we used to rely on traditional employers to do, you know, we have to rely now on ourselves, companies like Current, you know, Lamanu, and the financial systems.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.